At Scribble, we're proud to keep the free audiobook by podcast tradition going strong. But, of course, the free model only works as long as you sometimes swing by Scribble.com, that's S-C-R-I-B-L.com, and support our authors by also purchasing their titles in ebook or higher quality ad-free audiobook form. Scribble pays authors at the same rate or better than other outlets, so there's no better place to show your support for your favorite author than by buying your next book from Scribble. That's S-C-R-I-B-L.com.
KBS Publishing proudly presents Origin Scroll, Volume 1 of the Target Trilogy, written by Richard S. Tuttle, read by the author. This is a reading of The Origin Scroll, Volume 1 of the Target Trilogy, by Richard S. Tuttle. Chapter 3, Refuge. The trip to Bordeaux took 3 weeks instead of 2. There were no further Yaki attacks, and the greatest calamity was the wagon tipping over. The villagers were weary, but they were also turning into well-seasoned travelers. Lark, Nolan, and Eddie had really matured and were very helpful during the trip. Alex was able to utilize them as scouts, or have them keep the party moving while the older boys went off in search of food. Bordeaux was in view now, and the party would reach the border town in a few hours. "Layman," called Alex, "the trail from here to Bordeaux is fairly straight. Keep the group moving along. I'm going on ahead to see if there might be an area of the town where the villagers can camp. We also need to get supplies for the rest of the journey, and materials to start our new village."
"Don't forget to inquire about some carpentry tools," added Layman. "If we're going to have to build a village out of the dust, we will need some basic tools at least."
"I'll inquire, Layman," replied Alex. "But I'm pretty sure the town's people aren't giving any away today. I'll see if I can gain some employment for us. We'll meet you when you get to Bordeaux." Alex waved goodbye to the caravan and started jogging towards the town. He tried to recall what he had heard about Bordeaux. He knew it was primarily a border town between the Kingdom of Targa and the Republic of Cordonia. It hosted a small fishing fleet that worked the waters of the Targa Sea, and it was the only way through the mountains that was accessible year-round. Alex slowed to a walk as he reached the town. Bordeaux seemed to have 2 streets. One well-worn dirt road squirmed along the Targa coast and through the town to a customs checkpoint on the Cordonian border. The other was a short, dusty cross street that ran from a group of huts to cross the main road to the fishing docks. The huts appeared to be fairly old wooden structures with thatched roofs. Lining the main road were stores and merchants. Most of the commerce seemed to be geared to the passing traveler. There were 2 inns, a blacksmith, and a butcher with fruits and vegetables displayed on tables out front. In addition, there was an arms dealer, 3 taverns, and a large wooden structure named Tulik's Shipping. There were several other small wooden stores that did not have signs, but Alex assumed one of them must be a medicinal store. At the far end of the town by the border were a large wooden stockade on one side of the road and a small stone structure on the other. On a hill overlooking the stockade was a very large stone house with gardens. Between the small stone structure and the sea were a large field and a small wooden shack. Down the cross street, Alex saw the fishing docks. There was an assortment of old, rickety-looking fishing boats, several long flat tables used to cut fish, and a number of smaller tables that were displaying a variety of sea life, presumably for sale. There was also a wooden building, approximately twice the size of the town huts, with a fisherman's net hung above the door, Across the street was the fourth tavern. Alex ran his hand through his long, tawny hair and sighed. He was not sure what he had expected to find in Bordeaux, but the prospect of finding enough work in the town to supply his party did not look good. He had pushed the villagers for 3 weeks to get this far, and they needed to replenish their supplies and rest for a while. Alex walked towards the docks and talked with the fishermen. They laughed at his request for work and showed him a rotting pile of fish that hadn't sold. Undaunted, Alex strode over to the netmaker's hut. A weathered old man sat in a chair with his feet on the table, snoring. Alex closed the door loudly, and the old man nearly fell out of his chair. Suffering a string of obscenities, most of which Alex didn't understand, he quickly retreated outdoors. Having never been exposed to alcohol, Alex decided to bypass the taverns. At the blacksmith's, he was politely told no. The butcher explained that with winter coming, traffic on the road was down, and so were his sales. The first inn, the Boar's Head, was run by a friendly couple, with their daughter being able to handle all of the work. A young woman ran the second inn, the Wagon Wheel. Even though it was late afternoon, there appeared to be no guests at the inn. Alex inquired about work, and the young woman started crying. Trying to soothe her, Alex inquired about the reason for her distress. The woman went into a long story of how she had come to inherit the inn. She had no knowledge of running an inn and could not understand why everyone chose the Boar's Head over the Wagon Wheel. Alex wanted to press for work, but the woman would not stop crying or talking long enough for Alex to get a word in, so he turned and left. Alex was beginning to long for the woods, where things were simpler. These town people were either outright rude or overly friendly. He saw his caravan approaching the town, but figured he still had time to try Tulik's shipping. He entered the building through the large double doors and saw half a dozen wagons. Out the back door he could see that the company had their own stables. A large bull-necked man, who was completely bald, approached him. "Ramor is the name, lad. What can I do you for?" "I'm looking for work," said Alex. "Yar now, are you?" returned Ramor. "And what is it you do, lad?" "Well," answered Alex, "I can do most anything you need, I guess. I mean, that is, I'm willing to do anything you want done." "We got no call for laborers," quipped Ramor. "I see you're carrying a bow. You knows how to use it?" "Sure," exclaimed Alex. "I can hit a ground squirrel at better than 50 paces. I'm not sure how much better, because they're not that hard to sneak up on." "I'm sure you can," doubted Ramor. "We may be looking for some guards next week. Come back then. We'll see what you can do." Alex stood looking at Ramor's muscular back as the man strode away. The villagers were nearing the town now, and Alex jogged out to meet them. They looked like a bedraggled bunch, having worn the same clothes for almost a month. The village women had been good about washing everyone's clothes whenever they had a chance, but that did not help the worn-out clothes and shoes that the many of them were wearing. Alex had a brief moment of utter despair before he remembered Geneva's secret. "Ho, fearless leader," greeted Layman. "Where do we park our caravan?" Alex looked at Layman's smiling, freckled face and thought quickly. "There is a large field down by the border between a small stone structure and a small wooden hut. We'll set up camp there. After you lead the group to the camp, meet me down by the sea. I have some thinking to do, and I could use your counsel."
"Sure, boss," grinned Layman. "Should I have Kyle join us?"
"No," replied Alex. "Right now I need your optimism." Layman led the group down the main street, joyfully checking out the town. The townspeople looked out in disgust or pity as the group moved by. Alex strolled down the waterfront, trying to think of a way to make money. He wondered how Layman would approach the problem. When Alex reached the small wooden hut by the field, he sat down on a large rock and stared at the sea. Soon Kyle came running from the field.
"Alex," gasped Kyle, "that small stone hut is the customs hut, and they say that the field is only for travelers awaiting inspection across the border. They say we have to move on. Layman is trying to charm them, but with his charm, we're likely to end up in jail."
Alex was trying to hold himself in check. Nothing, absolutely nothing, was going right today. The sun was starting to set, the townspeople had the manners of an alley cat, And now some dictator in a uniform was telling these women and children to go home. A home they no longer had. Alex's fists were clenched and his muscles were tensing up. He was ready to do battle with a customs inspector. Alex whirled and started towards the stone hut. Layman and a sandy-haired boy were strolling towards them. They seemed to be having a jovial chat, and Alex felt his rage start to subside.
"Alex, this is Oscar Dalek, Borden's welcoming committee," introduced Layman.
"Oscar, this is Alex Torque, our fearless leader." "I am pleased to know that Borden has a welcoming committee," quipped Alex as he offered the boy his hand.
"Oh, certainly," remarked Oscar. "Layman here has been telling me that the customs inspectors were giving you a hard time about staying in the field. I can take care of them. They are my friends."
Alex was starting to relax. At last they had found someone cordial in Bordone. This tall, lanky boy put the rest of the town to shame. The villagers deserved a rest after what Alex had put them through.
"That is very kind of you, Oscar," acknowledged Alex. "I was beginning to doubt that there was a decent person in Bordone, and for that I apologize."
"Oh, no apology is necessary, Alex," offered Oscar. "I can see that your party has traveled long and hard and deserves a nice rest, and because of the late hour of your arrival and my good nature, I will only charge you 10 crowns for the entire party."
Alex snapped. He stepped forward and seized Oscar's tunic with his right hand, lifting the boy over his head and slammed him into the wooden hut. Alex held him against the hut, 2 feet off the ground.
"You little slug," lashed Alex. "Is that what your life is worth, 10 crowns?
Layman and Kyle tried to control Alex. Layman tried to squeeze between Alex and Oscar, and Alex shoved him away with his left hand, sending Layman sprawling. Kyle grabbed Alex's right forearm and tried to force it downward, but Alex viciously grabbed Kyle's wrist with his free hand and squeezed until Kyle let go.
"These women and children whom you want to charge to use your field," spat Alex, "don't have 10 crowns. They don't have 1 crown. They don't have a home. They don't have husbands or fathers. They don't have clothes to keep them warm. They don't have decent shoes to walk in."
Layman and Kyle looked at each other. They had known that Alex was strong. They had seen his muscular body, but neither had imagined that he possessed such strength. They had both been village boys while Alex had been out in the woods felling trees. They realized that neither one of them would be a match for Alex, but his outburst had captivated the attention of the villagers, and the customs inspectors were starting to get curious about the commotion. They had to do something quick, or Alex was going to be in a great deal of trouble.
"Fearless leader," joked Layman. "Perhaps this good citizen can tell us of a field we may camp in. The villagers won't mind another short walk. We don't want to upset the customs inspectors now, do we?"
"They don't have jobs," continued Alex.
"The customs inspectors are coming, Alex," warned Kyle. "They'll arrest you, Alex."
"And your lousy town won't allow them to have jobs, so now they don't have hope," shouted Alex.
"They're coming, Alex. Alex, please," pleaded Layman.
"The only thing these poor villagers have," argued Alex, "is me. And that, Oscar Dalek, gives you something in common with these poor villagers, because the only thing you have between life and death is me. Now I suggest, sir, that you graciously offer the use of this field to these villagers, with your compliments, of course. I know these inspector friends of yours are going to take me away from mishandling you, but I give you my solemn oath, Oscar Dalek. If these villagers are harassed or abused or forced to move, I will come back to kill you."
"Hey, what's going on here?" demanded one of the inspectors.
"It's okay, Reese," gasped Oscar. "I made a very unfortunate joke about this gentleman's sister, and he was just enlightening me about the proper protocol in his area of the kingdom."
Alex lowered Oscar to the ground and turned to face the inspector.
"I told the villagers that they could use the field for a few days, Reese," added Oscar. "Why don't you come over later and join us in the campfire for some ale and stories? And I'll try to keep mine socially acceptable this time."
"Well, okay, Oscar," said Reese. "If they're friends of yours, they're friends of mine. But you have a strange way of entertaining your friends."
Alex told Kyle and Layman to get a fire going. Kyle was reluctant to leave, but he was soon following Layman, who was in a jovial and highly animated conversation with Reese.
They seemed to be sharing some joke, and Kyle was fascinated at how Layman always managed to find humor in the darkest corners. Reese appeared to be totally engrossed in whatever Layman was saying. They looked like two old friends who hadn't met in a long time. Oscar straightened his tunic. "Okay, village leader. I have kept my portion of the bargain. I trust you will keep yours and allow me to speak without harm."
"You may speak," snapped Alex, his muscles starting to quiver from the reducing tension.
"Bordona is a commerce town," started Oscar. "Everyone here has to earn their living through their wits. I was merely trying to gain some food for my mother and myself. I assumed you were traveling gypsies and deduced that 10 crowns would be fair remuneration for the use of the field.
I know nothing of your troubles, but I do now recognize that there are no men in your party.
Let's start over, Alex. I have secured your use of the field for a few days. Let us sit and talk so that I may become familiar with your troubles. Perhaps I can help you."
Alex was beginning to feel guilty about his abuse of the boy. He had failed to keep his emotions in check, and his thoughts drifted to Geneva. He wished she had come with him. She had a calming effect on Alex, and he could use her to keep his wits.
"All right, Oscar," he replied. "Let's talk. Perhaps I have misjudged you as well."
Alex told the story of the villagers, the death of the men, the flight of the women and children, the attack of the Yaki, and their trek to Bordone. He also told Oscar about his earlier reception from the townspeople in his quest for work. Oscar laughed and quickly explained himself. "I'm not laughing at your predicament, Alex. I am amused at the townspeople's response to you. They have no imagination. I need to know what skills your party possesses and what items you will need to start your village." Oscar and Alex strolled over into the field, where Kyle and Nolan were starting the fire. The women and children were getting settled in. Lenore and her 10-year-old daughter, Marga, were absorbed in preparing food for the group. The boys had managed to kill a wild boar earlier in the day, and it would be a good diversion from the rabbit and quail that had been standard fare for the last few days. Marga had her long brown hair tied back like her mother's. It was easy for Alex to see that Marga resembled her slender mother rather than her rotund father, Fred. Alex thought back to the day which seemed so long ago and remembered the farmer Fred offering to lead his cows out and slaughter them. Hazra was right. The men had been very brave. They had given everything that they had to see their family safe, and Alex could not let them down. Alex and Oscar sat before the fire, and soon Layman and Kyle joined them. Alex was saying, "And nails for the building."
"And carpentry tools," added Layman.
"Seeds and livestock," offered Lenore.
The villagers were starting to gather around the boys now.
"Bolts of cloth and thread and leather," chimed Kara.
"Hoes, rakes, and shovels," continued Marga.
"Paints and brushes," proposed Nolan.
"Paint?" queried Oscar.
"Sure," said Nolan. "Paint stops the wood from weathering, and the stores ought to have proper signs attached."
"With the men gone," asked Oscar, "are you sure these villagers are going to be able to create the village from nothing?"
"Sure," asserted Layman. "I can fashion wood almost as well as my dad, and he was the best carpenter in the Gordo region. Alex knows trees, and you're aware of his strength to fell them."
Lark snickered, and Alex felt his face getting warm.
"I've been painting with my dad for 3 years now," continued Nolan, "and Marga and her mom handled most of the farming at their place."
"You should see what Kara can do with thread and cloth," said Lenore.
Oscar was starting to see the wisps of a plan forming in his mind.
"If I can get you your supplies by bartering your labor, would that be acceptable to everyone?" he asked.
The group assured him of their desire to do precisely that.
"And would I be out of line," offered Oscar timidly, "to expect a broker's fee for my services?"
Alex laughed.
"No, Broker Dalek, you would not be out of line, providing, of course, your fees were reasonable."
Alex was beginning to appreciate Oscar's tenacity.
"Well then," laughed Oscar, "let me go and get us some refreshments to toast our contract."
Oscar took off for the small wooden shack by the shore, and shortly returned with a small keg and some tin cups. A tall, lanky woman followed him with short auburn hair, carrying a plate of dried biscuits. The woman's dress had seen better days, but it was clean.
Oscar introduced Marta, his mother. The cask contained ale, and as if on cue, Reese appeared when it did. Alex was hesitant about trying the ale, but Kyle insisted that it was good ale, and that Alex would be insulting their host if he didn't at least toast their contract. The talk centered on Bordeaux, and Oscar revealed that his father used to be a customs inspector at this very post. Smugglers trying to sneak goods across the border had killed his father. Reese added that everyone believed the smugglers worked for Tulik, but nothing could be proven. Alex had wondered how this lad had been able to appropriate the customs inspector's field. Oscar and Reese continued their banter, touching on each of the town's population. Alex discovered that the large stone house across the road belonged to Tulik, who was considered the mayor and most prominent citizen of Bordeaux. Alex enjoyed the bitter taste of the ale and was beginning to feel very relaxed. The talk continued for many hours, with many of the villagers joining in. Alex had left the discussion early. He had begun to feel extremely drowsy, and his lack of sleep during the last month finally caught up with him. The sun was already well into the sky when Alex awoke. His face was warm, and his mouth felt like someone had dusted the interior of it. He had a slight throbbing in his head, and his eyes had trouble focusing. He could hear a female singing somewhere nearby. He stumbled down to the sea and dove in. The water was cold, and the slight shock to his body started waking him up. "Ah, fearless leader," greeted Layman. "You slept the sleep of the dead last night. Your troops are already in battle." "Battle?" quizzed Alex. "What battle? Who?" "Easy," replied Layman. "It's only a figure of speech. Nolan is off painting the wagon wheel. Oscar got them to agree to buy twice as much paint and twice as many brushes than they needed, if Nolan would do the painting for free. Oscar also arranged for Kara to make dresses for sale. She will get to keep an equal amount of cloth and thread for her labors. She was also given a fine set of needles for performing the work."
"That's great," Alex exclaimed. "I may have misjudged our wily friend."
"Does that mean that you're glad you didn't kill him?" laughed Layman. "Very funny, Layman," Alex drawled as they walked back to the campsite. Alex noticed that everyone seemed to be cheerful this morning. A few people were singing, whistling, or humming. Others were sporting smiles that Alex had not seen in a long time. Alex noted a couple sitting with their backs against Marta's shack talking. It was Carlene, Lark's mother, and Reese. They looked as if they belonged together. Carlene's long black hair had the same sheen as Reese's did. They appeared to be around the same age, and both had similar dark brown eyes. Reese appeared to be listening intently, twirling his long black mustache to some yarn that Carlene was spinning. They both smiled and waved as Alex walked by. Kara was sitting at a long table, which must have been brought out of Marta's house, with bolts of cloth and spools of thread spread around. Gonora, Nolan's little sister, was there learning Kara's craft. Oscar came trotting across the field.
"Alex, great news," called Oscar.
"Old man Hoover has agreed to supply many things on your list."
"Good morning, Oscar," greeted Alex. "I see our broker has been busy this morning.
I will admit, you do seem to have a talent for dealing. I wonder how much it will cost the gods to admit you into the heavens. Still, we are grateful. I have not seen these people happy in a long time, and it is your doing."
"No, village leader," quipped Oscar. "It is your doing. If you had killed me last night, you would be in jail and these villagers would be lost on the road somewhere. I see you took quite a liking to my ale last night."
"I'm afraid I'm not a drinker," answered Alex. "I think I must have drank from the bottom of the cask, though. I have such a dusty taste in my mouth." Oscar laughed. "Come into the house and I'll fix you some coffee. We can discuss old man Hoover's requirements."
"Ah, yes," said Alex. "Coffee is just what I need. What is it that we have to do for this, Hoover, and what is it that we owe you for your services?"
"Do not worry about my fee, Alex," answered Oscar. "It will be something you will gladly do. As for Hoover, he owns the dry goods store here in Bordeaux. You probably never noticed it because it is small and has no sign. He wants you to paint him a beautiful sign and add a small addition to his store."
"And for this he is going to give us many of the things on our list?" asked Alex.
"Well," responded Oscar, "actually the small addition will triple the size of his store, and you have to supply the lumber. Hoover has started a petition to have building tools hit with an import tax. So when the Cordonian workers come in the summertime seeking work, it'll be cheaper for them to buy new tools here than to bring theirs with them. I don't think King Eugene will go for such nonsense, but it doesn't matter for our deal. He is willing to supply your goods in return for the lumber and work.
Very well, stated Alex. It looks like I will be teaching Lark how to fell trees.
Oscar, I may have misjudged you last night, but I demand to know what my payment is going to be. I do not wish to misjudge you again, and I will not bargain what I cannot pay.
Okay, replied Oscar. I want my mother to have a decent house. An inspector's pay is very little, but my father chose to live in the town rather than at the stockade. He never had a chance to completely finish her house before he died. I tried patching it up with whatever materials I could find, but my skills are not the same as yours or layman's. We have the worst house in the town, and people look down at my mother because of it. Someday I will have Tulik's house up on the hill for her to live in. But for now, I want you to repair this house and paint it.
Alex smiled. He was starting to like this little conniver. He certainly would never play cards with him, but he was beginning to think Oscar had a heart after all.
Agreed, stated Alex. We will make your mother's home a place for her to be proud of.
Alex and Lark spent every day in the woods felling trees. Lark was a good worker. He did not have the knowledge of the trade that Alex possessed, but he was a fast learner and a strong lad. Alex enjoyed working with Lark. Most of the time they worked in silence, but when they spoke, Alex realized that Lark was a lot like himself. They would be done felling trees today, and then Alex and Lark could help with the construction. The villagers were busy. They had tarps to cover the construction work at the dry goods store, and a couple from Marta's house. They moved her furniture outside so that they could remove the roof and start replacing the walls. Marta and Oscar were camping out with the villagers and were sharing their duties as well. The dry goods store had priority, so the boys spent most of the day there. The women were instructed each morning on the tasks for Marta's house. When questions arose or the strength of a lad was needed, someone would go to the store and fetch Lehman or Kyle. In the evenings, everyone would sit around the fire and discuss their work or tell stories. The villagers were happy having something to do. They were proud of their work and excited about getting the needed supplies for the village. Nolan's painting skills were sought after in the town. He had a flair for color combinations and a talent for sign painting. Kara's dresses were the talk of the town. Bordeaux didn't have its own dressmaker, so the dresses previously sold in town were imported. This made them expensive and fairly common. Kara's dresses were unique and tailored for each individual. The villagers were being accepted by the townspeople. One morning, Alex awoke and saw three wagons sitting at the edge of their campsite. Over traditional morning coffee, Alex asked Oscar why the wagons were there. Oscar explained that they were Tulik's wagons, probably bound for some city in Cordonia. The inspectors would hold them up for 3 days and check every parcel in every wagon. Tulik ranted and raved each time this happened. His deliveries would be delayed, and he had to pay for drivers and guards while they sat around waiting. He had even sent letters to the king, but nothing ever happened to change the practice. The king would send an inquiry to the baron would summon his regional commander, the regional commander would demand an answer from the garrison commander at the stockade. The garrison commander would summon Reese or Elwin, the customs inspectors. Reese or Elwin would explain that they had reason to suspect that there was contraband on board, had held the wagons up for inspection, had found nothing, and let the wagons pass.
They do this for all the wagons that come through? Asked Alex.
No, replied Oscar. Elwin and my father were close friends. He is convinced that it was Tulik's boys that killed my father. He hates Tulik and will do anything he can to cause him grief.
Alex looked over at the wagons. Reese was inside one of the wagons handing out packages to Elwin. Alex noticed that Elwin had a long scar on his face, running from his brown hair down to his jawbone, and asked Oscar about it.
Sometimes the inspectors can get unruly travelers, answered Oscar. Smuggling is a hanging offense, and when they get caught at it, they will go for their weapons. Elwin was a little slow once. He says my father killed the attacker and saved his life, but I was too young to remember.
Alex joined the boys at the dry goods store. The addition was completed, and they had to clean up the site so that Nolan could start painting. Now they would be able to finish up Marta's house. Within 2 weeks, they would be leaving Bordeaux, heading into the Garrett region, where they planned to set up a new village.
They had managed to procure just about everything they needed except for livestock. They would be able to buy livestock nearer the village, providing they had some money. In the evening, everyone was sitting around the campfire as usual. Reese once again had joined the group. He seemed to be spending quite a bit of time with Carlene recently. The villagers were starting to get excited at the prospect of finally founding their new village, and spirits were high. Suddenly, a scream split the night. Alex wasn't sure where it had come from, but Reese took off for the wagons. Elwyn came charging out of his stone building and also headed for the wagons, his sword drawn. Alex ran. One of the wagon guards was holding Marga against the wagon. As Alex saw Reese and Elwyn converge on the wagon, the other two guards pulled their swords to protect their friend. The drivers ran to the center of the road to indicate that they were not involved. The inspectors were afraid to advance lest the guards harm the girl. It was a standoff. Lark came running over to Alex and handed him his bow. Lark then grabbed two of Layman's homemade arrows and with his knife chopped off the sharpened points. Alex understood and said, "I've got the one on the right." Both boys fired at the same time. Alex's blunt arrow struck his guard in the forehead, and the guard collapsed to the ground. Lark's arrow hit his guard in the chest. The guard dropped his sword and staggered backwards. Elwyn and Reese rushed in. Reese held his sword to the chest of the disarmed guard, while Elwyn had his pressed against the throat of the guard holding Marga. Layman and Kyle rushed over and gathered the guard's swords. Oscar must have immediately run to the stockade, because he was already on his way back with half a dozen soldiers. Marga ran to her mother, and the village women gathered around to comfort her. After reviving the guard Alex had shot, the soldiers led the three captives away. "That was quick thinking, Lark," praised Alex. "And good shooting," added Reese. "If you boys ever decide to join the army, let me know. I'd be proud to sponsor you." The drivers made a point of coming over to the campfire and apologizing for the guards. They wanted to make it clear that they had nothing to do with the affair, and were glad that the guards were arrested and wouldn't be going to Kalimar with them. They then returned to their wagons and avoided the villagers. Knowing very little about Cordonia, Alex asked Reese about Kalimar. Reese told him that Kalimar was a very large city in Cordonia. It was a seaport about a week's ride by wagon. It was the capital of the Kalimar province and had a very large market. The campsite returned to normal. Marga had not been harmed, and the event would have been a minor one had the guards not drawn their weapons. As it was, they would be spending some time in jail. In the morning, Ramor came striding into the campsite looking for Alex. Alex saw him coming and figured it might be trouble. "You villagers have cost me 3 guards and a delay in my shipment," stated Ramor. "How do you plan to repay me?" The rest of the boys had gathered besides Alex, and it was Oscar who replied. "Repay you? You don't seem to have a firm grasp of the situation, Ramor. Alex here saved you money. You were about to pay for guards that weren't worth the money you were paying them. You're very fortunate that they blunted their arrows before shooting, or you would have had 3 dead guards. And I'm sure you know what would have happened if your guards had killed another inspector before Alex intervened." "Another inspector?" spat Remor. "Tulik shipping had nothing to do with your father's death, and you know it. You do make a good case against the guards, though, defeated by a bunch of boys. You must handle that bow rather well, Alex. If I remember correctly, you were looking for some work a while back. You could repay me by guarding my shipment to Kalimar and back." "And what remuneration are you offering for this service?" asked Alex. "Ah, you want to be paid as well," chided Ramor. "Very well. I'll give you 50 crowns each for 3 guards."
50 crowns, laughed Oscar. "You paid those fools 100 crowns each, and they would have never made it to Kalimar."
"No, Ramor, I'm sure I could talk Alex into guarding your precious cargo for 200 crowns each. You might be able to do better elsewhere, but I'm sure that your wagons are ready to proceed today. Of course, without guards, you'd be a fool to allow the wagons to leave. Getting replacement guards might take you 2 or 3 days."
"Alex, do you let this viper speak for you?" asked Ramor. "Certainly you will be more reasonable in your demands."
"Actually, Ramor," answered Alex, "the 600 crowns would be helpful to the village, but I'm not sure that we have the 2 weeks to spare for the trip. Give me an hour to think it over and I'll give you an answer."
"Not in this lifetime, villager," spat Ramor.
He turned and stormed back down the road. "Sorry, Oscar," said Alex. "I thought I saw the game you were playing and pressed it too far."
"Not at all, Alex," laughed Oscar. "I couldn't have done better myself. We had better start making up our packs. I doubt Ramor will give us the full hour."
"You think he will still want to hire us?" asked Alex. "And what do you mean, we?"
"You don't think I'm letting you go without me, do you?"
"I've always wanted to see Calamar," said Oscar. "I might be able to make some contacts there for my own shipping company. Besides, without me along, you might get yourself into trouble."
"Okay," conceded Alex. 400 crowns for the village is better than I would have asked for anyway."
About a half hour later, Tulik himself arrived.
"What is this arrogance, young man? You dispose of my guards, negotiate an outrageous fee, and still refuse to guard my shipment? Here is your 600 crowns. Now get those wagons rolling."
"Yes, sir," replied Alex. "We'll leave within 15 minutes. You can count on us, sir."
Satisfied, Tulik turned and headed down the road. Alex couldn't contain his laughter.
"Oscar," he snickered, "I'm not sure whether it's more dangerous having an enemy like you or a Yankee. Lark, get your stuff together. You're coming with me and our verbal warrior."
Eddie gave Oscar his bow and quivers, and the boys headed for the wagons. The drivers were congregated at the second wagon and appeared to be in a jovial mood. They were an odd-looking group. From the ages of the driver, they could have been three generations of the same family, but their appearances couldn't have been farther apart. Fram, the lead driver, was an ancient, wrinkled, gray-haired man. Jarek in the middle wagon was a 20-year-old whose tan, muscular body indicated that he'd been doing outdoor labor for some time. He had thick, dark hair which hung down over his ears and forehead. The last wagon was driven by Gidas, a middle-aged, short, scrawny man with thinning hair. The boys paired off with drivers, Alex taking the lead wagon and Lark taking the last, leaving the middle wagon to Oscar. The wagons pulled out of the field and the villagers waved goodbye. By the time the boys returned to Bordone, Marta's new and larger house would be completed. It would then be time to gather their supplies and start the final leg of their travels to their new home. For now, they were headed to Calamar.
"You're a quiet one, aren't you?" commented Fram.
"Sorry," said Alex. "I was just thinking of the villagers and what they've been through. They lost everything, and yet they were so cheerful, waving as we left."
"You're a sentimental one too, then," added Fram. "That's good, Alex. I saw last night what you could do, and I prefer to have that kind of courage in a man who cares about others. Those dogs that you helped run in last night were a bad lot. I've ridden with them before. They'd cut your throat for a couple of crowns, and it always gave me an uneasy feeling riding with them. You'd never know if they had sold out the bandits or not." "Are there many problems with bandits on this route?" asked Alex.
"More than most routes," explained Fram, "though I've had many a trip with no encounters. The important thing, though, are your guards, and old Tulik normally implies those with good skills. If you do run into bandits, you either live or die by the skills of your guards."
"Surely the bandits won't hurt the drivers?" asked Alex.
"I mean, all they're after is the cargo, and if they can scare off the guards, they can take the cargo and leave. I don't think you have anything to worry about."
"Ah, lad," sighed Fram, "that's not the way it works here. You won't be using any blunted arrows on this trip. I'd have thought Ramor had explained that much to you. If we run across any bandits, it will be us or them. They take no prisoners, they leave no witnesses. No, lad, if we are attacked, they will kill us all. But let's not dwell on such unpleasantness. I've run this route for 30 years, and I plan to run it a few more. Have you ever been to Calamar before?"
"No," replied Alex. "I've heard it mentioned in conversations, but all I know of it, I learned last night from one of the inspectors."
"Well, you're in for a treat then, lad," laughed Fram. "It's probably bigger than any city you've ever seen. I remember the first trip I made to Calamar."
Alex was lost in thought. He had never killed a man before, and he did not look forward to starting now. Sure, he had threatened Oscar, but it had just been a threat. He was angry, and yelling at Oscar had been his vent to let off steam. Oh, he had been bad enough to get into a serious brawl, but killing a man? That was something else. He wondered if he could do it if he was forced to defend the caravan. And what about Lark and Oscar? Perhaps he was in over his head.
And we had to carry him back to the wagons, Fram was saying. Ho now, I think I lost my audience. Okay, lad, I'll give it a rest for a while.
I'm sorry, Fram, replied Alex. There's a lot passing through my mind. The first day of the trip was uneventful. Alex liked Fram and felt sure that the feeling was mutual. Fram was a wealth of information. He knew practically every foot of the road, when to move left or right to avoid rough areas. The trip certainly was very beautiful. The road was in the forest, but ran along the coast of the Targus Sea. Alex was mesmerized by the size of the sea and thrilled by the abundant wildlife in the forest. They had only seen two other travelers the entire day, some local farmers moving livestock. The caravan camped the first night in a clearing by the sea. Fram and Gidas laid out the campsite while Jarek's duty was to prepare the meal. The boys went off into the woods for some archery practice. Oscar did not have much experience with a bow, and Alex labored to make him as good a shot as possible. Alex also explained the use of the reed and quills and cautioned Oscar on the importance of slow, deliberate movements when employing the blowgun. Alex mentioned his conversation with Fram and the knowledge that they may be called upon to kill bandits. Lark merely nodded, while Oscar confirmed that Reese had told him that they never found survivors of raids. Throughout the practice, the boys revealed their conversations with the other drivers. It was evident that Oscar liked Jarek. Jarek had been a driver for 3 years, but this was his first time on the Bordone-Calamar run. He had last been on the Balfour Bordone run with Gidas when they were attacked. The lead driver had been killed and the guards deserted. Jarek had hidden in the forest, as drivers are instructed to do when attacked. When it was all over, Gidas and Jarek had to walk the rest of the way to Bordone. Jarek was sure that they would be fired, but Gidas blamed everything on the deserting guards, claiming that they must have been in on it. Remor had said he suspected the guards were no good and would give Gidas and Jarek a chance on this run. Lark indicated that Gidas was a pretty sour sort of a man. He didn't talk much, and when he did, it was normally with a fairly foul vocabulary. He had grumbled about having to break in new guards while following some old fool and a kid. Lark had gotten the impression that Gidas knew the guards who had been arrested the previous night, and that they had been the only thing about this trip that Gidas had liked. Gidas had also inquired about the additional small quiver each of the boys had. Lark wasn't sure why, but he had told Gidas that it was a religious thing prominent in some of the villages in the Gordo region. The boys had about an hour of practice before Jarek called that dinner was ready. Alex cautioned the boys that they might be in over their heads. He told them to keep their ears open and to hold to Lark's story about the small quivers. Dinner was pleasant, and Jarek proved to be a competent cook. The animals were accustomed to the invasion of humans in their midst. Alex was pleased to hear the familiar sounds of the forest again. Fram captivated the boys with selected tales of his 30 years' experience. He was indeed a gifted storyteller. Morning came early for the caravan. Fram had them up and moving before the sun rose. The trip was enjoyable for Alex. The forest smells mixed with the scent of the sea and the warm sun beating on his face gave Alex a feeling of serenity. Fram's stories were quite amusing and educational. The old weathered man was a wealth of information, and Alex was always full of questions. Fram always seemed thankful that Alex was actually interested in what he had to say. Alex assumed that most of the guards employed by Tulik would have told the old man to shut up on the first day. Each night the boys would go off into the woods for archery practice while the drivers took turns setting up the campsite and cooking dinner. Gidas was a fair cook, not as appetizing as Jarek, but the boys looked forward to another meal created by Fram. The silver-haired driver had a unique way of preparing food that seemed to tantalize the taste buds. Fram cooked the second night, and it was his turn again tonight, so the boys were excited. During the practice each night, the boys would compare information received from the drivers during the day. Jarek had wanted to join the army when he was younger, but he had failed to find a sponsor. He had roamed around for a couple of years doing odd jobs before he was finally hired as a driver 3 years ago. He now enjoys the travel and gave up his aspirations of being a soldier. Gidas was rather tight-lipped and had more questions about the boys than information he wished to share. Fram, on the other hand, would tell much more than you wish to know. Fram called, and the boys hurried to the campsite. Food supplies for the trip had been loaded with the cargo in Bordone,
so the guards did not have to hunt for food during the journey. Each driver could select the food for cooking duties during the trip. Fram created a beef dish with a wine and berry sauce. The wine and berry flavors fought for supremacy in combining with the flavor of the beef. The result was that each bite had a slightly different taste, and all of them were excellent. The old man's crinkled with each compliment. Oscar thought Fram would have been better suited as a chef in an expensive inn, and said so. Fram laughed and said he loved to travel his job allowed him, but when he was no longer able to drive, he would love to cook. Fram once again captivated the group with his stories until it was time to turn in. Alex awoke with a start. Thinking that he must have been awakened by some sound, he listened intently. He heard nothing. He heard no sounds, no animals. The animals had grown accustomed to their presence hours ago, so something else had disturbed them. He quickly rose and grabbed his bow and quivers. He woke the others and then cautioned them to be silent. Gidas was missing. Perhaps he was being overly cautious. Maybe Gidas had gone to relieve himself and startled the animals. Still, he motioned the group into the woods, away from the road. He sent Fram and Jerick deeper into the woods and told them to keep down. After a short while, Gidas came strolling into the camp, loudly demanding to know where everyone was. Alex didn't answer. Gidas was furious, stating that he had only gone to relieve himself and came back to find everyone hiding. He demanded that they come out and stop trying to scare him. Alex figured that Gidas was telling the truth, and he had just been overreacting. Just then, Alex heard sounds coming from the road. "Gidas," he called softly, "get into the woods. Someone is behind you on the road." "Alex," Gidas said, trying to determine the direction that Alex's voice had come from. "Is that you?" Alex called to Gidas again, and Gidas came towards Alex's voice and entered the woods. Gidas knelt next to Alex and demanded an end to the joke. Alex told Gidas to go further into the woods and hide himself, and Gidas obeyed. Alex heard rustling sounds coming from behind the wagons and peered into the night. The fire had long ago died to embers, and the woods were quite dark. Alex managed to pick out several shapes moving through the campsite and shoving blankets aside with their swords. "Throw your bows out, we'll let you live," the shape called out. Alex said nothing. "I don't have time for boys' games," the shadow shouted. "Throw out your bows now, and I'll let you all live. If you don't, we'll kill you all, drivers included." Gidas called from the rear, "Throw them your bows. We don't need to die for Tulik's cargo." Fram shouted, "Don't be fooled, lads. They'll no more let us live than they're on a pilgrimage to the temple." An arrow sailed into the woods in the direction of Fram's voice. Alex peered at the shadows. He could make out six of them. They would never survive an archery contest with the bandits. Alex whispered to Lark and Oscar. Oscar gave his bow to Lark and crawled off to the right. Alex gave his bow to Lark and crawled off to the left. "You've got 1 minute to throw out your bows or we come in after you," came the demand. Lark positioned himself behind a large tree and waited as long as he thought he could before calling out, "Okay, we're throwing the bows out." Fram cried, "No!" and another arrow sped towards his voice. Lark threw one bow out at a time. When the third bow bounced into the campsite, several arrows thudded into the tree Lark was hiding behind. The laugh boomed through the forest. "Never send boys to do a man's work, I say." Lark immediately moved as Alex had instructed. The six shapes moved towards the forest. Lark saw one of them stumble and fall. They were getting closer, and Lark got his reed ready. Another of the shadows fell, and there were sounds of confusion coming from the clearing. Lark sent a quill sailing into the leader, and the shape immediately dropped to the ground, jostling the man next to him. Alex saw the leader fall as he was sending a quill into a bandit who had turned around to see what was happening to the cohort behind him. Uncertainty filled the clearing, and the two remaining killers weren't sure whether they should continue the attack or flee. Within seconds, it didn't matter. Oscar and Lark fired their second shots, and the clearing was quiet. Oscar came out of the woods and pulled the quills from each of the bandits, while Alex and Lark remained concealed. Gidas came up behind Lark to see what was going on, and Lark demanded that he remain down. Oscar disposed of the quills in the forest, and Alex came walking up the path from the road.
"It's okay to come out now," he called. "Fram, Geetus, Jarek, it's safe to come out. Let's get this site cleaned up and get out of here."
Alex then turned around and disappeared down towards the road. The group started to reassemble in the clearing. Oscar was gathering the bandits' weapons and searching the bodies. When Oscar was finished, Lark helped him drag the bodies into the woods.
"What happened?" demanded Geetus. "How did they die? I don't understand. I thought we would all die."
Oscar stepped into the clearing and said,
"Did he forget to mention it? Alex is a mage.
All he had to do was look into their eyes, and their own wickedness stopped their hearts."
Geetus was speechless.
The boys helped themselves to the weapons so that each boy now had a sword, shield, and dagger in addition to his bow. The rest of the weapons were put into the back of Fram's wagon. Alex returned leading 6 saddled horses. He proceeded to tie 2 to the back of each wagon.
"It looks like the village has a start on its livestock," he commented.
Geetus started to object, pointedly avoiding Alex's gaze. Lark stepped over to Geetus and held up a hand-drawn map that he had found on one of the bodies. The map showed their stopping points. A note was scrawled on the back, which indicated the boys were armed only with bows, and not to worry about the additional quivers, because they were religious articles.
"Alex knows," Lark stated. Geetus grabbed Lark's sword, but before he could complete his swing, a mirror quill appeared in his chest.
This has been a reading from the Origin Scroll by Richard S. Tuttle. Thank you for listening. I hope you have enjoyed the journey. Origin Scroll is the first volume of the Targa Trilogy and the cornerstone of the Epic Fantasy Alcea Collection, which spans 16 volumes in 3 series. Origin Scroll and the other volumes of the Alcea Collection are available in print and ebook formats. For information about these novels, or the author, Richard S. Tuttle, please visit rstuttle.com. Special thanks to Kevin MacLeod for the use of his music. Vortex and Sky Coelan, as well as many of Kevin's other great works, can be found at incompetech.com. Comments and suggestions are always welcome. Email for the author can be sent to richard@rstuttle.com. Thank you for joining us. We hope you enjoyed the stay.